Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 5, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. And if you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here, located in the upper left-hand corner of that page, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you will see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and then we can have a conversation. If you would prefer to contact us through email, you can do that. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you through the email, we will address it on the internet show. And then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so that you can listen back to the archives for the feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody chooses to share that information with us, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. What's resonating? What's helpful? What's stirring things up so you can see them and let go of them if they're not serving you? What questions might you have about the worksheet process itself, either how it works or how you can get more benefit from it? And whether or not the readings we're doing and explanations we're giving of various books are landing well for you. Any of these comments and questions, even if you would like to refute something that we're discussing or offering for observation, that's welcome as well. We had a support group last night, as we do most every Tuesday and Thursday for the past 12 years now. And the Tuesday group is fast approaching its 20-year anniversary in August. And we listened to some vintage Guy Finley last night. And it is just a delight for me, as I keep talking about on the show, that all these different places where I find the same message, essentially the same message, slightly different terms used and jargon, you might say, but the essence of the recognition that we are the ones creating our experience of life, and when we have an experience that we don't prefer and we understand how we were creating it, it opens the door for us to create differently in the next moment. And if you have any questions about how that happens or how we might be able to assist you to create your life experience differently moment to moment, please give us a call or send us an email. You know, I have been doing this work for a long time, and I occasionally run into people that are just absolutely convinced that their life is miserable and it's wrong and it shouldn't be happening. And the only thing we have to offer in a situation like that is the observation that whatever my conscious logical mind is serving up to me in any given moment, when I have anger or frustration or hurt or tension or guilt or shame or any of those emotions that we might call unpleasant or negative, whatever my mind is telling me about that situation and my life in that moment is not accurate. You might say it's a lie, you might say it's completely false, but what we can absolutely say is it's not totally accurate. How can we say that? Because we understand, by simple observation, that we don't know everything. We can't possibly know everything with that conscious logical mind, because it can only register a tiny fraction of everything that our senses are registering. And our senses are only registering a tiny fraction of what there is in actuality in the world. Well, how can you say that? Because our scientific instruments can measure things, can register and measure things that our senses can't perceive. So clearly there's a lot more going on than our senses can register. And then if you recognize that your senses register thousands and thousands of times more than your conscious logical mind can track in any given moment, then it becomes very easy to recognize, oh, I don't really know what's going on here. So good thing there's a feedback system built in to this body-mind experience as a human being. And the feedback system is my emotional state. And anytime my emotional state is painful or unpleasant, it's the indication that whatever my mind is serving up for me is incomplete and or off the mark. So everything about this work is based on these fundamental observations, and we're encouraging people again and again and again to start making these observations for themselves, because in that moment when I observe this for myself, that's the only time I can actually do anything useful with the observation, with the material. If I'm trying to make it fit that mold because of something in my life, because of something that somebody told me, I'm really fighting upstream. I'm really fighting a losing battle, tilting at windmills, some would say. But if I'm in the moment and I observe how my life works and what is the actual dynamic for creating my experience of life, and I recognize that this feedback system that we call the emotional energy system is a flawless mechanism for letting me know when I'm either on track or off the mark, then all kinds of possibilities open up for me instantaneously. So here's hoping that some of that is happening for you. Here's hoping that what we're offering in this work is useful at a very practical level for you. And if it's not, please let us know. If you're trying to get a shift or a different experience in life by using the Reality Management Worksheet and it's not giving you any results and you've got questions about that, that's what we're here for. We're here to answer those questions and to assist in reversing that situation, helping you get practical, real-life change and benefit from the use of these tools. Again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you're so inclined to call that number and want to chat, please press 1 on your phone pad, and that will let me know that you're interested in having a conversation. Had a lot of different energies moving in the past few days. We've had a very good friend of the family pass away a week ago, and lots of people sharing stories and memories and pictures, and some people talking about, you know, basically idealizing the person. And some talking a lot about the grief and that energy flow that they most often talk about it in a sense of that it's happening to them and they have no sense of control or agency in that process. And it reminds me of some callers we had on the internet show probably only 2 or 3 years into it, and probably about 10 years ago now, that a woman was calling, and she'd called on a regular basis for a while, and she was talking about how she belonged to this grief group and how it was so beneficial because every once in a while in this grief group they would have this big emotional catharsis and all of this wailing and gnashing of teeth and shedding of tears. And it stuck with me, you know, pretty clearly that Michael Rice was responding to that and trying to help her see that the emotion of grief is something that we create by pouring our mind energy into a certain pattern of thought. And he talked about how her thought structure about grief and her belief system that it was something that happened to her whenever she experienced a loss that she didn't, you know, want, was like the 55-gallon drum. It was like this empty container that was there and ready to hold whatever grief energy that she would start pouring into it whenever she would lose somebody. And then she would pour this mind energy into this pattern of thought about how bad this is and how much she's going to miss these people, and that the 55-gallon drum would start to fill up with this energy that she called grief until it reached the top, and then it would spill over. And then she would dump it out in this great emotional catharsis and all these tears, and then she would feel so much better. And then over time, again, there'd be other things that would happen in her life that she didn't like, and she'd start filling up that 55-gallon drum with these energies of sadness and grief, and eventually it would reach the top again, and she'd have another big catharsis. And he tried to point out to her that this could be an endless cycle. She could just continue to believe that she has no sense of agency or control over when she feels sad over something, and that this thing that's grief is something that just happens to her as a byproduct of life and the flow of life events. Or he was suggesting that she might decide to choose to use some of the tools that they make available, the reality management worksheet and the targeted journaling and the breath work, to start dismantling her belief in how grief works and how it happens to her as an external wave of energy from life events, so that she could literally begin to dismantle the 55-gallon drum. And then experience life events as they come. And yes, there'll be some sadness and there'll be some joys and there'll be some, but you let them flow rather than store them and hold on to them and lock them down with the breath. And that pattern of choosing to observe and live life from observation as opposed to living life from the belief, whatever your belief is, in this case it would be a belief about the source, the origins, the cause, the solutions to grief, etc. And the invitation in this work is always to choose again, to take a look, to start some observation, to move out of belief and be in the questioning mode. And that's been coming up for me in this past 7 or 8 days since this is a relationship that had been in my life for close to 50 years, and someone who'd been very involved in my family. They counted him as the third brother in our family, and so it just brought to mind this idea of grief. What is it? How do we get it? How does it happen? Does it happen to us? Is it something that we have some sense of control or agency in that we could work with as a process when it comes up? And I just thought I'd mention that. I have in my MindShiftersAcademy.org website a process for grief and loss is how it's labeled. I call it the saying goodbye to good people without saying goodbye to good memories. And it's a seminar that I have given for years, and we finally got a good recording of it back, I don't know, about 10 years ago now. And so it's there in two separate one-hour audio files that you can listen to, and a PDF file of a listing of categories. That's just a starting point for engaging that process. You might decide to use that process and then use the PDF file, or you might launch off of that list of categories of things that are in that PDF and create your own set of categories or questions for yourself about how you want to evaluate the memories of your life experiences with a certain person or a certain job or a certain, you know, place that you lived as you go through doing the process for saying goodbye to the experience without saying goodbye to the good memories. So I've talked about that before. There are plenty of these shows that have that as a theme. I won't go into it in depth here, but I just mentioned that again because it's come up as a part of the life flow. Several people in my caseload and in my personal life have had what we consider losses because somebody moves away or somebody dies or somebody chooses not to be in relationship, active relationship with us anymore, etc. And awareness of the process and how it works can be quite liberating. It can be very useful to understand, okay, so I'm having this intense emotional experience. What role might I be playing in creating and maintaining that? And if I don't prefer that, if I would like to have a different kind of an experience, where would I start in creating a different life experience? That's what that talk is about. And it's on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. It's got its own page on the process for grief and loss. It's also listed on the educational materials page. So there are the two audio files available for download and also the PDF of the list of categories as a beginning point for reviewing the relationship memories and cataloging them, categorizing them, distilling the life lessons from them. So, 563-999-3581, give us a call. Let us know what's going on for you. It's a Friday. We're heading into the weekend with all kinds of potential for life to bring us an opportunity, as Michael Aries likes to say, bring us an opportunity to practice forgiveness. And in Michael's understanding of that ancient definition for that word, that's a chance to dismantle anything that's less than love that arises within our mind-body-energy system. And forgiveness as a tool for dismantling that which we experience as unpleasant or anything that's less than loving is not what we normally hear in our culture. It's not the way life is usually talked about or forgiveness is talked about. Forgiveness is really usually referenced more as a way of pardoning, acknowledging in the beginning, hey, someone or something did something horribly wrong, and we can all agree on that, and they probably should be punished. Yep, we all agree on that. And then I'll decide, wait a minute, I'll be the bigger person, and I'll just say, no, they don't have to be punished. I'll let them off the hook, which is an okay thing to do. I mean, it's one of those deals where you conserve your mind energy or choose to pour it into more positive venues, and that's lovely. However, it doesn't do anything to alter the internal process that's actually creating the upsetting experience in you or the unpleasant experience in you. And that's where what Dr. Michael Rice says, this ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness is about going inside yourself and doing the internal work. So regardless of what happens on the outside, you can restore yourself to this active present moment awareness of your true nature as this miracle of the energy of creation expressing in form. Some call it love. And you can immediately alter your experience of life in that process. You don't have to wait for events to change from the outside. And, of course, this is exactly what the Way of Mastery says to us. You know, there's a whole lesson, a part in a lesson where it says, please understand that love is not something that you have to wait for things in the outside of your life to change before you have an experience of this thing we call love. It's this all conditions, you know, with zero restriction energy flow. And you can get access to it. All you need to do is learn how you're blocking your awareness of it. Learn what you might have downloaded as a belief system or as a traumatic energy in error. So, I had somebody yesterday was responding to my suggestions about Anthony DeMello's book, and they sent me a link on YouTube. They said it's almost 9 hours of recording of Anthony DeMello's book, Awareness, Remastered and Unabridged. So that's just another resource. If you don't want to buy the book, you can go to YouTube and apparently somebody's reading his book, or it might be the live recordings that have become part of the audible version of that book. The last thing I was reading from his book, Anthony DeMello, on the book Awareness, and again, the idea of the overlap between what the Way of Mastery wants us to step into and practice for ourselves and observe for ourselves, and a book like Anthony DeMello's Awareness, is that so many of the themes are, they're practically identical to my eye and ear. So one of the things he's talking about in this book, Awareness, is the idea of a concept. And he says, every time I have a concept, it's something that I could apply to a number of individuals. We're not talking about a concrete, particular, like a name, like Mary or John. It doesn't have any conceptual meaning. A concept applies to any number of individuals, countless individuals. Concepts are universal. For instance, the word leaf could be applied to every single leaf on every tree. The same word applies to all those individual leaves. Moreover, the same word applies to all the leaves on all the trees, big ones, small ones, tender ones, dried ones, yellow ones, green ones, even banana leaves. So if I say to you that I saw a leaf this morning, you don't really have any idea what I saw. Let's see if you can understand that. you do have an idea of what I did not see. I did not see an animal. I did not see a car. I did not see a human being. I did not see a shoe. So you have some kind of a vague idea of what I saw. But it isn't particularized. It isn't concrete. So the phrase human being refers not to a primitive man, not to a civilized man, not to a grown-up man, not to a child, not a male, not a female, not to this particular age or another, not to this culture or another, but it applies to the concept. The human being is found, concrete. You never find the universal human being like your concept. So your concept points in a direction of something, but it's never entirely accurate. It misses the uniqueness, the concreteness, because the concept is universal. So when I give you a concept, I give you something, and yet how little I've given you. The concept is so valuable, so useful for science. For instance, if I say that everyone here is an animal, that would be perfectly accurate from a scientific viewpoint. And yet, we are something more than animals. If I say that Mary Jane is an animal, that's true. But because I've omitted something essential about her, it's also false. It does her an injustice. When I call a person a woman, that's true, but there are lots of things in that person that don't fit the concept of woman. She's always this particular, concrete, unique woman who can only be experienced directly, not conceptualized. The concrete person, that's something I've got to see for myself, to experience for myself, to intuit for myself. The individual can be intuited, but cannot be conceptualized. A person is beyond the thinking mind. Many of you would be proud to be called Americans, as many Indians would probably be proud to be called Indians. But what is an American? What is an Indian? It's a convention. It's not part of your nature. It's a concept. All you've got is a label. You don't really know the person. The concept always misses or omits something extremely important, something precious that is only found in the actuality, which is why concrete uniqueness is important. The great Krishnamurti put it so well when he said, quote, "The day you teach the child the name of the bird, the child will never see that bird again," close quotes. How true this is. The first time the child sees that fluffy, alive, moving object, he's filled with awe. And as soon as you say to him, "Oh, that's a sparrow," then tomorrow when the child sees another fluffy, moving object that's somewhat similar, it says, "Oh, sparrows. I love sparrows. I've seen sparrows, but now I'm bored with sparrows." If you don't look at things through your concepts, right, if you look at things directly, if you're present in the moment, you will never be bored. Every single thing is unique. Every sparrow is unlike every other sparrow, despite various similarities. It's a great help to have similarities so we can abstract and we can have a concept. It's a great help from the point of view of communication or education or science, and it's also very misleading, and it's a great hindrance to seeing this concrete, specific individual or situation. If all you experience is your concept, you're not experiencing reality. Because reality, actuality, is concrete. The concept is a help. It can lead you to an experience But then once you get there, you've got to intuit or experience it directly. You can't stay stuck in your thoughts about the thing. You can't be living and reacting from the past, from the traumas, from your emotional response about a thing, because then that moment you're not relating directly to the thing, the situation, the person, the life flow. A second quality of a concept is that it is static. It's stuck. It's a part of the past. It's a label. It's an old dead thought. Whereas actuality is constantly in flux. We use the same name for Niagara Falls, but that body of water is constantly changing. You've got the word river, but the water there is constantly flowing. You've got one word for your, quote, body, close quotes. However, the cells in your body are constantly being renewed. Let's suppose, for example, there is an enormous wind outside, and I want the people in my country to get an idea of what an American gale or hurricane is like. So I go outside while the wind is blowing, and I trap the wind in my cigar box. And then I go back home and I say, hey, look at this. This is an American tornado or hurricane. Naturally, it isn't a gale or a hurricane anymore, is it? Once it's captured, it's not the same. It's a concept. It's a snapshot. Or let's say I want them to get the feel of the flow of a river like the Mississippi. And I go to the Mississippi and I scoop up a bucket of water. The moment I put it in a bucket, it stops flowing. The moment you put things in a concept, they stop flowing. They become static and dead. And you're no longer in relationship with the moment or the person or the flow of events. A wave is in motion. A frozen wave is not a wave. A wave is essentially movement and action. Concepts are always frozen. Reality flows. Actuality is flowing. Finally, if we were to believe the mystics, and it doesn't take too much of an effort to understand this or even believe it, but no one can see it all at once, reality is whole. Actuality is whole. Yet words and concepts carve it up, fragment it. That's why it's so difficult to translate from one language to another, because each language cuts reality up differently. Try to think about this. We're all human beings. We're all intelligent at different levels. Why is it so difficult to communicate from one language to another? The thing that just popped into my mind was that when I was in my internship year all those years ago, I was doing an internship at the Rush Anchor, Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Hospital in Chicago and their Anchor HMO. So this was a very large medical system in Chicago. And they offered an HMO, which meant a much lower price insurance policy for mental health. And that meant we got all kinds of people from the lower economic strata. And so we got a lot of people who were brand new in the country. We got people with Vietnam and from all parts of Europe where the English was a second language, and South America and South Africa. And one of the things that was just such a hindrance to making a connection and helping these people was the fundamental concepts about family and emotions and relationship and values we're so different from one culture to the next. Even the levels of shouting or physical violence that were tolerated and not tolerated varied widely from one culture to another. And if you think about it this way, it's not that those people are bad or wrong. They're just, their language, their culture has carved actuality up differently than we have over here. One of my favorite examples of that is that I was raised in a family where one of the most rude things you could possibly do is burp without covering your mouth or burp at a table when people are trying to eat. And yet there are other cultures where a nice loud burp is a compliment to the chef. Why? Because their language, their culture carves up actuality differently. So Anthony goes on and says here, every language has untranslatable words and expressions. He says, the English word home, quote, home, H-O-M-E, close quotes, is impossible to translate into French or Spanish. And then he says, quote, casa, C-A-S-A, close quotes, is not quite the word home, H-O-M-E. Home has associations as a concept that are peculiar to the English language. He repeats, every language has untranslatable words and expressions because we're cutting up actuality and adding something or subtracting something, and usage keeps changing. Actuality is a whole. It's a flow of life, and we cut it up and make concepts, and we use words to indicate different parts of this whole, of this flowing river of life. If you'd never seen an animal in your life, for example, and one day you found a tail, just a tail, and somebody said to you, oh, that's a tail, and you've never seen any kind of an animal before in your life, would you have any idea what it was? If you had no idea what an animal was? No, because the only way it makes sense is as a part of this whole concept. So he goes on and he says, ideas actually fragment the vision, intuition, or experience of actuality as a whole. This is what the mystics are perpetually telling us. Words cannot give you reality. They only point. They point in a direction. They indicate that you might do certain things to have an experience, and the experience is the only thing that's true, with a capital T. Once you get to the thing that your concepts and words have pointed to, then your concepts and words are useless. You need to step into direct experience. He says, a Hindu priest once had a dispute with a philosopher who claimed that the final barrier to God was the word God, G-O-D. The whole concept of God was the final barrier to God. The priest was quite shocked by this, but the philosopher said, quote, the ass, the donkey that you mount, that you use to travel to a house, is not the means by which you enter the house. You use the concept to get there, and then you dismount, and you go beyond the concept. Anthony says, you don't need to be a mystic to understand that actuality is something that cannot be captured by words or concepts. To know actuality, you have to know beyond the intellectual knowing. If those words ring a bell to you, they are from The Cloud of Unknowing, a book by the title The Cloud of Unknowing. Poets, painters, mystics, and the great philosophers, they all have intimations of this truth. It reminds me of the story of the two wise men, Buddhists, ancient basically. They're very, very old, very wise, and they're sitting on a bench one day in silence out in a park. And there's people walking all around, and these two wise, gentle men are just sitting there soaking up the day, and all of a sudden, one of them starts uproarious laughter. And the people are just shocked because they were, you know, these two basically ancient old men were sitting there, and now all of a sudden they're both laughing hysterically. And what happened was the first one started laughing, and he turned to the second one and he pointed and he said, "They call that tree, this magnificent constellation of energy and flow and, you know, with all the complexities of being home for animals and being the transmuter of sunlight energy into oxygen and into mass to become wood and sap and, you know, home for the birds and for the squirrels." And they just say, "Oh, that's a tree." And the absurdity of labeling this magnificent flow of life that's ever-changing with the word tree just triggered this eruption of laughter from these two. So the essence of this teaching is that this concept of God is just like the donkey that you would ride to a house. You don't go into the house on the donkey. You've got to get off that concept, and you've got to have some kind of a vehicle of direct experience to take you into some kind of a knowing about what the mystery of life is. Because all the great teachings say things like God is a mystery, God is unintelligible to the human mind. So we've got about 10 minutes left. 563-999-3581. Is this making sense? Are you seeing how the parallels between this and the exercise in Way of Mastery, where it asks us to spend 5 or 10 minutes just picking up objects around us and understanding how little we know about that object, to question it, to understand that my thoughts about the object are not the same as the object. My thoughts about a person are not the same as the person. Tragically, Anthony DeMello says, people fall into idolatry because they think that where God is concerned, the word is the thing. Even where human beings are concerned, or trees and leaves and animals, the word is not the thing. Yet, where God is concerned, you want to say that the word is the same thing as God? What are you talking about? An internationally famous scripture scholar attended this course in San Francisco, and he said to me, quote, "My God, after listening to you, I understand that I've been an idol worshiper all my life." Close quotes. He said this openly, and then he said, quote, "It never struck me that I had been an idol worshiper. My idol was not made of wood or metal. It was a mental idol. My thoughts and concepts about who or what God is." Anthony says, what I'm leading you to is the following, quote, awareness of actuality around you. Awareness means to watch, to observe what is going on within you and around you. And going on is a pretty accurate phrase because trees, grass, flowers, animals, all of this, even the rocks, they're all moving and changing moment to moment. And to be in relationship with it means you watch it. You actively observe it. How essential it is for the human being not just to observe herself, but to watch all of actuality. Question for yourself, are you imprisoned by your concepts? Do you want to break out of that prison if you recognize that you're imprisoned by concepts? If you do, then look, observe, move into the practice of living by direct observation. Spend hours observing and questioning. Watch everything, anything, the faces of people, the shapes of trees, a bird in flight, a pile of stones. Watch the grass grow. Get in touch with the things around you in the moment. Look at them directly. Watch the mind that wants to catalog and categorize and label them and tell you that it knows this or tell you that it's bored. If you practice living in the observation, hopefully you'll then break out of these rigid patterns that we've all developed, we've all been trained into, out of what our thoughts and our words have imposed upon us. Hopefully we will see. What will we see? Hopefully we will see that this thing we choose to call reality, actuality, is beyond all words and concepts. This is a true spiritual exercise, connected with spirituality, connected with the breaking out of your cage, connected with breaking out of the imprisonment of concepts and words. This is directly what Way of Mastery is calling us to in the exercise where it says, wherever you are, just notice. What's the first thing your eyes fall on? I'm in my office here. The first thing my eyes fall on is a Kleenex box. It's multicolored. And then I just start asking myself these questions. How did I come into contact with this first? If I'm the one who purchased at a store, what made me decide to go into that store in the first place? What was the first time that I chose? And what made me choose this box of Kleenex tissue over another one? And then I can look at the box and I can say, what is this box made of? We call it cardboard, but what does that mean? Is it like paper, just like paper and stiffer? What about the colors on it? Do they come from an ink or some other kind of pigment? I have no idea. When in human history paper was invented, cardboard was invented, and then I shift my focus and my eyes go to a picture on a wall. I have no idea where the wood came from for that picture. Is it actual wood? Is it fake wood? I have no idea how this picture came to be. If it's a photograph, I have no idea when the idea of photography began. Was this taken from a camera that was analog, digital? What's it printed on? Living in the question, moving out of the labels and concepts, opening myself to the practice of observation moment to moment. It's the same thing that Anthony DeMello calls us to in the book Awareness. It's a deep spiritual practice. It's what Krishnamurti was talking about when he said over and over again, please understand that the word is not the thing. Your ideas about yourself are not yourself. The labels you have in your head about you are not accurate. You are constantly flowing and changing, growing and shifting. The labels you have in your head don't change anywhere near as much. And all of this work is calling us to pay attention to what happens when I pour my mind energy into a pattern of thought about myself. Depending upon the pattern of thought, one primary thing that happens is I start to generate emotions. I was working with somebody this morning, and they're generating a lot of negative emotions about themselves. And it's all from a pattern of thought, a conclusion that's static, pretty darn sure that if you could meet this person and spend some time with him or her, you would say, oh my gosh, what a lovely person. What an intelligent, what a caring, what a sensitive person. And yet this person is sitting there pouring mind energy into thoughts about how they're a horrible person. Because they've decided to label something as bad or wrong. Something that's actually happening in life, something that they can have a role in doing. And from another perspective, this very thing they're doing is the perfect thing. It's a loving, responsible thing. But if they label it selfish, wrong, short-sighted, then all of a sudden, they generate an entirely different emotional experience. So Anthony DeMello's book, Guy Finley's work, Way of Mastery, they're all calling us to understand how little we actually know and to get more and more comfortable moving into living with direct observation, questioning all of the old labels, judgments, conclusions, ushering ourselves into a direct experience of the miracle of life expressing in, through, as, and around us, which instantaneously in each new present moment, that experience transcends all of the labels and all of the language and all of the concepts. And it's so much more full and rich and alive and flowing than any word or concept that it isn't even funny. It is delightfully liberating to step outside of the flow of thought and judgment, which is why in Lesson 3 of Way of Mastery, it calls us to question every judgment. It literally says, judgment is the opposite of forgiveness. Judgment's the opposite of the energy of love. Love is allowing, accepting, embracing, and trusting all things. Judgment, not so much. So, that's our first hour for today. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Deserving. Okay. Have a lovely weekend and a great show.
You too. Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, April the 5th, 2024. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, just say we've had some really good conversations the last few days. We do appreciate your questions and comments, and it helps direct the show. And then if there are no comments and questions, my two reading out of the Enlightenment book. So we'll give him just a moment to dial in. And Linda, if you're on the show, I'll just let you know that we did get your card for Aria, but we don't have her again until Wednesday. So we're just going to save it and let her open it. She loves to get mail addressed to her. Every time we get a package, whether it's Amazon or whatever, she goes, oh, is it for me? So she'll enjoy getting that. So thank you very much, Celinda. And let's see. Let me check and see if he's having any challenges getting in. And if you go to the website, whyagain.org, I have created, if you didn't already know this, if you go over under Kaboris, there are several items in the drop-down. There's, you know, the Kaboris source, the Kaboris pictures, the project, the Enlightenment book, and then there's the Enlightenment study, and that's where I'm putting the archives for all of the shows since we started working in the Enlightenment, even though some of them are not entirely out of the Enlightenment. They're, you know, around questions and all that have come in, but I've listed those archives there. They are also under the archives for the radio show. Then you can also pick up the history of the Kaboris, Aramaicisms, the ceremony that was held at Heartland around the Kaboris when they got it, Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer. And so there's a lot of things having to do with that. Also, you know, we did do Aramaic Fridays, and that was, let me look and see what year. And so every Friday that entire year, Del Allen Hoffman was with us, and the whole topic was on Aramaic. And that was in 20, you can go back, you can actually just type in, I'll put the link in today's notes, but you can type in our search bar, Aramaic Fridays, and it'll bring it up as well. So, let me see, Michael's not in with us yet, so let me check. Okay, we'll give him just another moment, and I'll let him talk about it, but he is doing 3-day personal one-on-one, very intense work, and he's had several people do that. If you're listening and you were one of the ones that participated in that already, it'd be awesome to have a testimonial, and he's working with a gentleman today, tomorrow, and the next day. So that's something new. Michael, I didn't go into detail, but if you want to talk about what you're offering there. Well, he's showing up
again,
on the switchboard. But
I made it. It's a little funky.
I was just telling him that I didn't go into detail. I just said that you had started doing 3-day personal intensives. And that if anybody out there was one that had participated in it already, we'd love to have a testimonial on that. And so I didn't go into detail of what you were doing, though. I don't know if you want to go ahead and mention that. We need to get that on the website as well. That's a new offering.
Yes. Yes, we do need to get that on the website. And basically, what I've decided to do is this summer is just with our granddaughter, and we've got a new grandbaby coming. It's just going to be too much to do a Heartland intensive season again. So we're putting that on hold. But I have had several people who want to do an intensive. So what I've set up, and it actually comes from a whole different place. If you've done a Heartland intensive, you'll note that we come at everything from a fairly soft place in opening and creating a safe space and moving through things. But this one-on-one personal intensive is for someone who's ready to take it all to the next level. And over the last 43 or 44 years since I first discovered still point breathing and realizing that was the key to being out of your mind, to opening physiology to remove whatever disease energies are there. And actually, there's a gentleman here that I'm working with right now. I started this morning, and one of the pieces of the puzzle that I got in working with him was the realization, you know, we've talked a lot about the power person dynamic. And because the power person dynamic is always tainted with hostility and fear, it's actually a physical disease when we leave that unresolved, stored somewhere in tissue. And so opening that up and removing that is really key. And so over the since I discovered still point breathing, one of my criteria, if you've done an intensive where we taught hands-on energy field work, one of my criteria in everything, and, you know, there are, I don't know, 30 different courses that range anywhere from maybe $200 to $5,000 in order to assemble that energy field work. And the criteria for becoming part of the energy field work was, does it create still point? Does it enhance still point? And in all of that training that I've done over the last decades, there have been several pieces of that puzzle that I couldn't really teach in an intensive setting. One, because some of it is too intense, takes it, you know, distinctly to a new level. And two, without medical training, there are some pieces of the puzzle that just can't hand to somebody without that. So what I've done is pulled the stops out on all of those things that crank the energy up to the next level and move from just a still point to a quantum still point that moves everything to the next level in terms of supporting the mind letting go and making the space for Rukka to really truly move, to really truly open the space for what needs to be worked through. The first gentleman that I did it with had shared with me the search he'd done over a couple of decades to try and have his health restored, and thousands of dollars spent and tens of thousands of miles flown. He was in the airline industry, so he had free airline flights. And just had not reached the space where his health was moving the direction of being restored. Like, I talked with him, did a little processing with him the other night, and headaches that would last for 3 days and three or four or five of those a week. Jaw challenges that led to extreme pain. And, I mean, literally close to two decades, and tens of thousands of dollars spent. And the result of the three-day personal intensive was his headaches are down to maybe one a week, and instead of being 18 to 24 hours in duration, it's been one headache that's lasted 3 hours in one three-day session. So that's the kind of effectiveness that's available. And it's for somebody who's, I mean, it could be somebody totally new to the work. They don't have to be acquainted with the work. They just need to stand in a space of willingness. I mean, it's an intensive that's going to be personally, physically, mentally, and emotionally challenging. So anybody that's ready to do that, you could drop Jeannie a note, Jeannie at whyagain.org. Or pardon me. Yeah, that's it. It's a .org address. And give her your name and address that you have an interest, and I'll be in touch with about it. Had a lawyer in last week from Montreal that just opened her whole story. Has been around this work for, I don't know, two decades or so. And that three-day intensive just put her to ground zero of the story she's been trying to undo and work through. And
she said she was actually going to come back in June and do it again.
Yeah, she's ready. She's already made a commitment for next June to come back. This June. Realizing the depth that she went and that there's more to do. So it's a powerful, fun process. It is exciting to get those quantum still points. It takes everything to a whole different level. It's a it's light years beyond a regular still point. So that's a new offering that we've put in place of doing an intensive season at Heartland this year. And I'll say thank you to the gentleman that we first did it with, because it wasn't something I'd really thought of before. He was coming through this way, and I said, well, he'd been doing the work for, I don't know, 2 years or so, and it's like, I'm ready to do something. And I said, well, come stop. His mother actually passed away, and he was on his way up to the Northeast to partake of her funeral. He said, well, wend your way in this direction, and let's do some work. And as I say, I've pulled the stops out on some things that I haven't used in intensives because they're just too intense. And just like out of that was birthed this whole new personal one-on-one intensive. And it's set up right now to be a 3-day. It could be expanded to a 4-day or even a 5-day if somebody is ready to do another level. But 3 days is a really powerful starting point. So that's what's on my plate. I actually just got back from doing the session with the gentleman who came in from Michigan today. So, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room that has a thought for us?
No, but I had gotten an email, and they're fairly new to the work. And so I sent them some information, but you might want to expand on it. One of the things they ask is, how can I forgive my former?
Okay, so this one may sound like a shocker coming from someone whose specialty over the last 4-plus decades has been forgiveness. Never forgive your former. Never forgive yourself. Never forgive anyone, because that's an impossibility. That's a fake thing. You know, they said, beware of wolf in sheep's clothing. Anybody who tells you you need to forgive somebody else for what's going on inside of you is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and or is just plain ignorant of what forgiveness is, just simply doesn't know. And what does that mean? Take in? Just about the whole world saying, forgive them, forgive them, forgive them. Go back to Yeshua in the Aramaic language, and he never, ever suggested forgiving anyone, and he never forgave anyone. But it's a requirement if you're living as a human being on planet Earth today to forgive continuously. And for most people, that leaves mass confusion. It's like, well, you're saying never forgive anyone but forgive continuously. Isn't that an oxymoron? No, not if you know what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is not letting other people off the hook for what's going on inside of you. That's a mistake made by the Greeks, where they took pardoning, I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, and changed the word that represented that process to forgiveness. So in the Greek mindset that we've been fed in this culture, and it's pretty much taken over the world, it goes like this. You did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll forgive you. I'll be big about it, and I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Now, that's a really nice gift to give somebody, especially if somebody really is, you know, way out there in left field in error. What a gift to give them. But that's not forgiveness. That's pardoning. So if I choose to pardon someone for what they've done, and then I'll step into doing my forgiveness work, recognizing that, yes, what they did resonated all kinds of pain in me, and because I live in denial and dissociation, I've taken that pain and put it in my brain's image of them, and being a member of the universal one-world religion of blame, I've got them to blame for what's happening inside of me. But you'll notice if you've ever done that routine that you've been through that particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time. That's all about you. It's not about them. So if I pardon someone and call it what it is, then I'll recognize that now what I need to do is understand that there is a painful response inside of me that I've been putting into my brain's image of everybody else and thinking they're the problem. That's the basic error that governs those who live in the one world universal religion of blame. And by the age of four, my take is, my offering is from observation, is that virtually everybody on the planet by the age of four has become a card-carrying member of that one world universal religion. We are working diligently with our granddaughter, who's five, keep her out of that religion in a world that, you know, virtually everybody's involved in that religion. So we're helping her to build the brain cells for responsibility. Oh, this is happening inside of me. I'm feeling it, therefore it's mine. Rather than this is happening inside of me, I'm feeling it, and I'm going to pretend that somebody else is the cause of it. So in Aramaic, forgiveness is the tool with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged in your structure in the first place. The hate, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the pain, the drama, and the trauma. So that's forgiveness. Forgive continuously. Whenever there is any form of hostility or fear moving in you, please apply forgiveness. Which means not forgiving anybody, not forgiving yourself, but applying the tool of forgiveness to remove the content from your body-mind unit that pretends that it's caused by somebody else. It takes a major mind shift. That's one of the reasons we call this Mind Shifters Radio. And virtually every tool we teach is a how-to access and remove what never belonged in a human energy system in the first place. And to determine what never belonged in a human energy system in the first place, let's determine what a human life is, or the newborn child. Having asked between Jeannie and I that question of tens of thousands of people all over the globe in many different languages and cultures, everybody's answer in describing the newborn is that of some variation on the theme of love. And I think when you recognize that that's a universal experience, then you start to go, oh, maybe this body-mind unit, maybe this device in which I live, move, and have my being is designed to facilitate and express the presence of active love. Huh. Human life. What a concept. My body-mind unit is designed for the expression of one energy and one energy only, and that is who I am. Who am I? I am the active presence of love. If I've lost that, then I've been brainwashed by the culture with all kinds of crazy hostility and fear-based ideas that I think are mine, that I think are about me, that I blame myself for, or that I think are about somebody else. And all of that's got to go. And making it go, the act of removing it, is forgiveness. So, is there something you need to pardon your former for? Get about doing it. And then go to work with the sadness, the grief, the rage, the fear, the hatred, the vengeance, whatever the dynamics are that are left over in your mind, and start to remove them. And when you stop putting them, those energetic patterns, into your brain's image of your former, watch how your relationship with your former will transform. It will change. And watch how your relationship with everybody around you changes. Because once you put your hostility or fear into your brain's image of someone else, from there it's easy for it to diffuse into your brain's image of anybody that you run into that violates the goal you hold for them. You take a look at the world right now, especially in the political world, all the rage, all the crazy stuff going on, and you'll notice that it's all people with internal pain that have stories to tell about how other people have violated their goals, and therefore other people are responsible for their pain. The only one responsible for your pain is you, the only one who has put an energy into your structure that doesn't belong there. Of course, a lot of it came along with the package in your genes, and then came your culture and your family system. And because we didn't know any better, we bought into those things. So this work is about cleaning up your own body-mind unit, which is your own multi-generational database. And when you look at what the generations have done, you know, you think about the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the pain, the drama, the trauma, the atrocities. You look at the fact that on planet Earth over the last 75 years, we've killed over 175 million people in war. What kind of trauma and pain is being carried around in those people, in the genetic descendants of those people who've been through that? That's all the stuff that needs to be faced, felt, and forgiven, removed from the structure in order for humanity to be free of it. In the meantime, most everybody lives in denial. What's our definition of this work of denial? When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. In order for my mind to hallucinate a reality that somebody outside of me is the cause of this moving in me, I have to hide from myself the cause of what's moving in me, which means I dissociate from the cause of my pain. Once I dissociate, I've created an unnatural condition called an unconscious mind. And I hide from myself the fact I am holding this energy that is the cause of my pain. And what I need to do is step into the process of forgiveness to remove it. And, you know, over the last 44, 45 years, I've been working on how do we get this, which is, you know, in most people's conceptual language, unspeakable. How do we get past all the beliefs that it's everybody else's fault? You know, if you look at when did the one world universal religion of blame begin? Well, if we look in the Western scriptures, we see, at least in that set of scriptures, where it began. You'll remember there was a man and a woman in a garden. And after the crazy stuff started to happen, the creator of the garden said to one of its beneficiaries, Adam, said, "What are you doing? What's going on here?" And you remember that Adam had a response. And his response was, "That woman you gave me." So now Adam takes no responsibility whatsoever for his folly, and he's got a woman to blame. You know, it reminds me of that melody line from that song of what was his name, "Wasted Away Again in Margaritaville." And some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but he resolves it. He says, "But I know it's my own damn fault." And we need to wake up. And we're not looking to make people step into the place of fault or self-blame. That's just another error. What we're looking to do is to support people in learning how to literally reach into their own structures, remove content that never belonged, and heal. So that's what we're here to do. And delighted that you're here to be part of the process.
And you have a hand up.
Well, let's say hello. Welcome.
Miss Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Oh, Michael, Jeannie, you're talking about this one world religion of blame. And we
yes.
have a small earthquake here in our area, actually in
I heard about
eastern,
that
western New Jersey. A lot of my neighbors, I didn't feel it. Maybe I was jumping up and down because I was teaching this morning,
Huh?
But my first thought is, this has been talked about in the Bible. We'll have floods. We'll have earthquakes. The end is coming. And it's all your fault. It's all our fault. So this is rather a big blame thing going on here in my understanding of that prediction in the Bible. I don't know whether you can comment on that or...
Oh, I can. I have
okay,
some thoughts
go ahead.
For you. Thoughts you've never heard All before.
Right. Okay.
Well, let's start with, once again, recognizing that it's an inside job. And you'll notice that the word responsibility has no reference whatsoever to blame, guilt, or fault.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about forgiveness, we're not saying that if you need to do forgiveness, then you're to blame for what's going on. We're not saying you're guilty. We're not saying you're at fault. We're just saying if you put an energy into your structure or into the world that disturbs your structure or the world, then you are responsible for what energetic patterns you've set in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you recognize that this is a, you'll remember at the top of the worksheet, no fault. It's not about establishing fault. It's about recognizing if this is going on in my world, in my physiology, in my family system, in my culture, you know, in my town, and I'm a participant, then it's my responsibility. And when I take mm-hmm. responsibility, then I can start to own, and what I've dissociated from and hidden from myself, I can start to bring back to awareness, and I can start to literally throw out of my structure, which means I can forgive it. I can remove it. As long as I'm in the blame game, thinking that responsibility means blame, and, you know, Vladimir Lenin, the man responsible probably for more deaths on planet Earth than anyone in history, said the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. Responsibility just means that. It means I'm a player here. I'm not independent of the world around me. And if I take responsibility, then I can forgive. I can remove those energetic patterns. No blame, no fault.
Mm. Okay.
Does
then
that make
question.
Sense?
That's good. It does. We are individuals as we perceive ourselves on this planet, and we are not separate. We as a kind of consciousness have, I mean, we're in trouble, as you often say, look at our political situation and everything. It seems as if we take personal responsibility and do our own work, that it's absolutely no guarantee that we can stop the direction in which things appear to be going. And because they appear to be going in that direction, we have to do more work on ourselves as far as fear, dread, whatever is in there about the direction this appears to be going. And I must say,
right.
I have to add, being almost 80, what I feel most of all now is that I feel personally, individually lucky because I might just shed my body before the worst happens. Not sure about that. But then tremendous regret for those left behind, those I know first, but those I don't know, including animals who are going to suffer or who are going to maybe experience pain, maybe they don't suffer. I don't know about that. I know there's a distinction. But I don't know how to put this into a question, but if we do our work, there's no guarantee. Okay, go ahead.
So here's your next assignment.
All right.
Part of what's going to hold the pattern of degeneration in place rather than turn it around is the fact that there are many minds who hold a fear-based energy called regret. And that needs to be forgiven. So that I come to the world, and, you know, I've pondered this question for many years and looked at it very seriously. And there was a time when I considered quitting doing this work because it's like there are too many crazy people. There's too much hatred. There's too much vengeance. There's just too much to, you know, I'm going to just go find a place to be safe and comfortable and forget it all.
Yeah.
And then I comprehended the words of a man named Yeshua, the physicist, who said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. What I'm personally working to do, ultimately the commitment is to make this available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, that doesn't mean I'm going to speak, whatever, 300 different languages and go to every country in the world to teach forgiveness. What it does mean is I'm going to deliver it to enough people like you and me and the other listeners to the show who are going to use it, and together we are going to create a critical mass energetically. And as Yeshua said, Yeshua the physicist said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. If we can get just that small critical mass number of people through the gate actually doing their work, then the energy of healing will become so bright and available that everything else will pale by comparison. All the rage, all the blame, all the crazy stuff that's going on, all the inflicting pain on others and inflicting pain on ourselves and playing all of that will pale by comparison of the bright possibility of, oh, there's a light, there's a thing called forgiveness. And when enough people join with that light, then it becomes a viable option for every mind, heart, and being on the planet, and they don't even have to speak language. Because it will become energetically, intuitively available from within. To me, that's hope.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say, is you have kept your hope. That's wonderful. Yeah. I love the leavening idea. And I've heard you talk about it.
Yeah, that was a savior. That was a real savior for me. Because otherwise I'd have given up. I mean, how do we get these people with such hate and rage, war, murder? I mean, just craziness. If we can just bring one more on board, who actually uses the tools, then energetically the tools become a viable option.
That's
and critical
great.
Mass
even,
turn the whole game
even
around.
Even though the critical mass, the individuals that join that critical mass and who are using the tools are still working on themselves. I mean, they're not done with their work. They're just heading in that direction.
Enough people heading in the direction is going to bring a transforming energy to the whole of humanity.
Oh, those are good words to hear.
Well, to me, it makes it all worthwhile. And as more and more people, you know, one of the things I observe is that, you know, 20 years ago when I taught this, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and people would hear it, and it was just like total, complete, you know, babble to them. And today, most people hear it and go, okay, well, that's making some sense. What do I need to do? And begin to embark on it much easier than they ever have.
Yes, and a lot of other people are doing similar work paralleling yours.
Absolutely.
And that's so encouraging too. Yeah.
To me, that's the hope of it. And that's why I maintain my hope. And I watch the kinds of transformations that take place. And when somebody goes, really truly goes to depth and makes that shift, it's energetically, it's major. I mean, I've used the example before of, you know, check out the patent offices around the world, and you'll find there's some distinctly new, never thought of before patents that have been patented, and they were patented on three different continents by three
right.
different people who had no communication with each other, and they all had the same patent. To me, that's an example of critical mass, that when an option, each person who does a piece of work, the person who's got the marital problem makes a breakthrough. They introduce an energy that becomes available to every person on the planet who has marital problems. The person who has financial problems, they break through, they do the work to clean that up, and they bring an energy in that makes the possibility of moving through those things available to everyone who has financial problems, people who have problems with their neighbors, people who have problems with drugs, with alcohol, with food, whatever it is. Each person, when I think about that, through the eyes of my physics training from my early education, and I think about, somebody in Italy and somebody in Massachusetts and somebody in Columbia, South America patented a totally new, never thought of before device in all three places the same day.
That's
not a coincidence. That's to me, that demonstrates the fact that when an energy comes into the world, it becomes available to anybody who's ready for it, anybody who's in resonance for it. So each person, you'll notice how often when somebody makes a real breakthrough on the show, I'm in total gratitude for the work they've done because they made something available that wasn't available yesterday. And if we can get enough people doing that, each opening, each healing experience becomes an energy that somebody in Colombia or somebody in Italy or somebody in Timbuktu can take hold of energetically and make the same shift. That's the hope of it to me.
That's good. Thanks for mentioning that you had been very discouraged. I mean, I think we get individually discouraged, and then we hear about somebody who's doing this work the way you are, somebody we admire and look up to, and you're doing it, and you admit to having had that kind of discouragement. That's encouraging somehow. It's just like saying, you can drag us along with you.
Yeah, there was a time when I thought about it. It's like, oh, there's so much hate, there's so much war, there's so much, I mean, just mass insanity. Who could change all of that?
Yeah.
And then the understanding, fortunately, I had these brain cells from my physics training as a kid. And I'm talking high school. And when I went to technical school, this stuff was like, about electronics and physics. And what has that got to do with spiritual healing? Well,
right.
It's the core of it.
Right.
And so that understanding, and then, I don't know when it was, it's decades ago that I came across that piece of information about patents. And then there's another really interesting demonstration of that or example of that. And there was a guy, a medical doctor, his name will come to you as I'm talking about it, but he did multiple personality research. And in one particular experiment, there's one experiment he outlines where this woman had diabetes. And, if you don't give her insulin, she dies.
Right.
And she's a known multiple. They take her into the laboratory. They're measuring all of her, chemistry, all of her stats. And they induce a personality shift. Now, here's a woman that if you check her pancreas and her normal personality, she's got full-blown diabetes, and it'll kill her. And they induce a personality shift, which, again, with my electronics and physics training, says they changed the vibration that was running her physiology. The governing resonant energy in her physiology shifted, and she had another very complex persona, personality, a very complex collection of frequencies that ran her mind. So her personality's changed. And guess what? Her diabetes disappears when that happens. Her so-called physical disease called diabetes disappears. Now, when she goes back to her original persona, she's back to diabetes. Now, what that says to me with my physics understanding is this is nothing but an energy system, you know, and then bring Einstein in on such things as matter. We have been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. We don't live in a material world. We live in an energetic world. Our eye, our brain produces pictures that make things look solid, so we think that they're solid. But they're not solid, they're energy. I mean, if you went into that woman's pancreas, you'd say when she's in her normal personality, you know, this thing is terribly dysfunctional. It is chemically altered to the point where she is at risk of dying if she eats too much sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And then minutes later, if you were to go in and investigate her pancreas, it's a perfectly healthy pancreas. There is no threat of diabetes there.
That's amazing. You know, you mentioned John Sarno and his work and that he was really ahead of his time, although he was closer to his time than an uncle we have of Tim's, Charles Bingham, Dr. Charles Bingham, who was laughed out of his profession because he said, illness is psychosomatic. That was the word he used. He wrote a book.
Yeah.
It seemed like a nutcase book, and they just thought he was a nut. And he, as a result probably of all that ostracism, he did become quite a pain in the ass as far as a person goes. I mean, he was, but he had it. He got it, but he was way ahead of his time. That's just unfortunate. I mean, I feel badly for him, but the book is still here, and maybe I wish I could find it. I think
I'd like to see the book. Text me the information, I'd like to look for it and see if I can find it. But here's my offering. I say thank you to him.
Yeah.
Because he brought an energy in. How long ago was that?
Mm-hmm.
How long ago?
Let's see. He was Tim's uncle, so he died in probably the late 1970s. He was one of Tim's father's brothers, older brothers, Charles Bingham.
So he wrote his book probably in the 50s?
Yeah.
That's the time at which I was starting to tap into this. And
wow.
So maybe Charles set the frequency up that helped me to catch on. I mean, I was programmed to be a factory worker. That's what I was supposed to do. My father was a factory worker, and I was supposed to go work in the factory. He could never understand why I wouldn't do that. I mean, I went and took a job where I made, I hate to admit it, but I was working about 70 hours a week, and I literally made $50 a week. And I put in a 70-hour week. And my father had a place for me in a major factory that he worked in, that he managed a department in, where I'd have made triple that for working a 40-hour week. And he could not understand why I would not go there.
Yeah.
But I knew there was something different. And
yeah.
I wasn't going to do that. So maybe I can personally thank your uncle or Tim's uncle for that.
Yeah, well,
that energy that
I can too.
Allowed me to lock on, and how many others?
Yeah. So we can do the work and contribute to the collective good, even though we're still, like Celinda's amazing wake-up sheet with Tim Hayes 2 days ago.
Right.
She was working on something that was happening when she was a tiny girl. And I remember thinking, not about her, remarking about her, because I've thought this thought many times, is, my God, she's my age, and why aren't we over this stuff yet? We're still doing that early work, and I'm doing my own. I have the little girl issues too, and one of my other uncles, Alfred Bingham, wonderful man, who just struggled with depression till his last days and did a lot of therapy and looking at a very open, loving human being, but didn't get comfortable on the planet before he shed his body. His work wasn't done. And I guess it's okay, because that's another thought that, like, if we can't get our act together in the 70 to 80 to 90 years we have, most of us have on the planet, what hope is there? But you're saying there is. It doesn't have to be perfect. That's good.
Well, Susan, yeah. I mean, he was ostracized to the point of driving him crazy, but look how normal our conversation is today. Look how this has become.
Yeah.
I mean, there are whole institutes of healing that are dedicated to that principle.
Mm-hmm.
And many
that's
professionals
true.
Practicing it.
Yeah, so, that's good. Okay, thanks. It did have an impact, even though he wasn't around physically to get any kind of positive feedback for it.
Right.
As you say.
What was the name of his book?
I can't tell you because I haven't been able to find it. Tim had it in his library, and I don't know where it is. I'll ask around. I know there's a copy for sure in the family compound in Salem, Connecticut, that place where I suggested you run a retreat years ago, and it was all booked up, remember? It's a
wonderful
place. It would be a perfect place for a retreat. I'm sure there's a copy around somewhere, and when I find it, I'll let you know.
Cool.
I'd love
to
read it again myself. Yeah.
But it takes that kind of mind that stands against the winds of the prevailing opinion that stands up and says,
right.
No, this is what I'm being guided to. This is what I've got. And thank you very much for all that you think you know. But, you know, that which goes against it is crazy. And that's how a new field, a new study, a new understanding begins. You know, there was a time in this world where, you know, if you said that you were going to build a device over which people could communicate long distances through wires, they'd have laughed you off the planet and told you how crazy you were.
That's true. Yeah.
And then that became the norm. And then if you said to somebody, and you can communicate over long distance without wires, they'd have said, right. Bill, we got how insane you are. And now, I mean, you know, I can push a few buttons on a little piece of plastic with a glass screen on it here, and I can be talking to Peter in Sweden inside of about 8 seconds.
Right.
And it took somebody to stand up against. I mean, you know, when the telephone was first patented, the scuttlebutt in the newspapers was, well, who would want some kind of a bell ringing in your home throughout the day and in the middle of the night? That was one of the objections to this thing called the telephone.
Yeah.
But somebody brings it in, somebody makes a commitment to it, and it becomes available. And it's all frequency and it's all energy. And, you know, I'd mentioned the other day that I'm working on a new article that started out as an Easter greeting. That's the Aramaic story of Easter. And putting into this language of ours, because this Greek-oriented language so bastardizes what the man Yeshua said in Aramaic that it's ridiculous. I mean, it would be like somebody who heard about this thing called a telephone, and they're going to write a story about it before the telephone ever actually is invented or functions. And what's their story going to look like? Well, most people who had a non-functional understanding of what Yeshua taught wrote stories about it, and it's non-functional. I mean, it's still based in fear. It's still based in punishment. It still speaks of a creator that Yeshua said was our Father, whose good pleasure it is to give us the kingdom. It still speaks about that as some punishing hellfire and brimstone kind of creator. which was one of the most ridiculous ideas that's ever been expressed on the earth. But minds who were filled with hellfire and brimstone actually believed that stuff and still do today.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they'll tell you you're going to hell if you don't believe that their hell is really a creation of a creator called love.
Mm.
I mean, think about it for a minute.
True.
So thank you, Uncle, for bringing that vibration into the world and being one of the forerunners of it.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
I love that idea of thanking him. That's good. Mm.
Well, I will personally look forward to reading his book and thanking him more directly once I've been able to tap into his vibration a little deeper, even though he's not in his body. In fact, let's ask him. Let's invite him. You know, you've got the genes that connect with him. You know, being intimately connected with, well, that means you do. The day you two had intercourse is the day that you exchanged genes. You are genetically connected to him.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talked about that. Okay. Right.
So you might invite him to be on your team for understanding this and feedback some of what you're understanding and learning to him, because he's still alive.
Mm.
He may not be in his body, or he may be in another body at this point. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's still alive and well. So let's invite him in to support us and maybe bring in some new wrinkles, some new understanding, some new aspects of it that we haven't thought of before that he totally comprehended and wrote about. Or maybe was only suspecting but wrote about, but did start to bring that vibration, that energy into the earth.
Good thoughts.
Yay. And as far as going back and touching into those early dynamics, you know, remember the power person dynamic. And the power person dynamic literally is running the world. And the power person was dynamic. I don't care whether you're the president of AT&T or of the UAW auto workers or of ExxonMobil. Your genetics were influenced by the generations that went before you.
Yeah.
And the power person dynamic, I don't care which one of those executives you are, or you're the president of the United States, or you're a peon in, you know, Central Asia somewhere. Your power person dynamic started and was well established probably by the age of 4.
Yeah.
And it's the power person dynamics were established in most family systems, were established generations and generations and generations ago. And each one who becomes willing, as Celinda was, to open that genetic memory, to open that early power person dynamic and begin to breathe life through it, to dissolve it and step into something else, opens a space for every other person willing to do their work.
That's a very hopeful thought.
It's accelerating. I know that, you know, right where I do with the radio show, there's a shelf on the wall right across from where I do the radio show. And there's a picture of my former partner, Dan McDougald. Dan was the man who originally owned the Cabours manuscript. Brought it back from Turkey and dedicated his whole life and fortune to bring that into the world. And I oftentimes look up at Dan and say, thank you, Dan. If you've got any more information for me, I'm here to listen to it.
Wow.
Give me your guidance. Support me in understanding this. This man was just a giant, giant of an intellect. You know, in the Navy, he was in the Navy in World War II, and they did IQ tests on everybody in the Navy, and he was number three or number four in IQ in the U.S. Navy in World War II. And we all have, I think, the right and the opportunity to invite those, and even invite those who originated some of the traumas that we need to work through, to invite their input and their support in energetically undoing them and facing those things and working through them. And then, of course, as Yeshua said, I'll always be available.
Mm.
So joining you in the process.
And we don't necessarily get through. We work with it as best we can, and we don't necessarily get through.
Well, you know, it's a process. It's not an event. Mm. It's not something that happens once. And you've heard me say this many times that, you know, for me personally, in terms of my own personal healing process, I've gone further in the last or done deeper work in the last 2 or 3 years than I did in the previous 50 years.
Mm.
And I expect I'll probably have, you know, actually I had a really deep opening just the other morning that was really profound for me, and it was on the upside and on the positive side, on the plus side. It wasn't about dealing with a trauma, but it was in a space of tapping into the presence of love and extending that love. And I had just a wave, literally a wave that went from my waist up into my shoulders and into my head of what I would identify as a ripple of the energy of the pure presence of love just moving through my own physiology.
Wow.
Something I'd never experienced on that level before. I mean, it was just like this literal wave. And now, if I'd have been in a mindset other than doing this work, I probably wouldn't have paid attention to it. But just being
wow.
with it, and it was just this sensation that was just awesome going through my physical form. And so, you know, I think each one of us who does our work is going to move through and do deeper and deeper levels of cleaning up our own genes and have more and more expression of what we're designed for, and that is that this physical device, so-called physical device we call a body-mind unit, is literally designed to incarnate love. And this experience was on a level that I'd never experienced before.
That's wonderful.
It was. It was pretty awesome. Pretty sweet. I spent about the next hour or so just hanging out with that energy. And it's available to all of us. We're designed for it. It's our most natural genetic design. And the world's holding up this raging conversation that it wants everybody to pay attention to so that we don't pay attention to what in the ancient teachings was called the still small voice that is within us. And we start paying
yeah.
attention to that. And we start to feel mm-hmm. the physiological effects of it would be my take.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Well, good
Sweet.
Work, Michael.
Yay.
It isn't very often I say that to you, but I'm saying
I'm
it.
Delighted. Received. Accepted and
Good.
Passed on and returned.
Good.
All right, we're down to the last minute or so. So thank you for the conversation, the questions, the thoughts, and everybody have the best year yet of your eternal life. Breathing with you. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Take care. Bye-bye.